From Chapter 4 of The Last Vampire, The Castle of the White Queen. Miriam moved toward the old castle. The last time she had entered this portal, it had been hand in hand with her mom. The building had been new then, smelling of beeswax and freshly hewn stone. Inside, the great rooms had glowed with candlelight. Lovely bedchambers had been built high in the structure behind small windows so that keepers could linger over their kills and the cries of pleasure and anguish could not be heard from the streets below. Just under that garret there, the little arched window, behind it was a sumptuous chamber where a keeper could make sport with his kill for as long as he cared to, flushing it with fear again and again, then calming it and delivering bursts of incapacitating pleasure to it. This would bring the flavor of its blood to an incredibly delicious richness, sweet and sour, reflecting the secret harmonies that sound between agony and ecstasy. She had not fed like that in a very long time. Mother Lamia always did. Sometimes her feedings would last for days. But Miriam's human lovers had not cared for it and had felt awful for the victims when she did it. Sarah Roberts, for example, could only bear to see Miriam do the quickest of kills. She herself struggled to live without killing, taking her nourishment from blood bank goop and pleading with Miriam for frequent transfusions that left both of them dizzy and bitchy. Miriam went to the door. The way she felt now, she'd like to take a big, blood-packed human straight up to that chamber. Full or not, she'd spend a couple of days on it using all of Mother's old techniques. They were the keepers, not the kept. No matter how brilliant, how numerous, or how violent, mankind remained first and foremost their property. She pushed at the door, locked. She shook it 3 times, making the very precise movements that were designed to dislodge the tumblers in the event that you had no key. Keepers did not have private property. All belonged to all. It opened. She stepped in, treading softly in the footsteps of her lost past. A profound silence fell, a keeper silence. Overhead, the great beams that had been so rich a brown in Mother's Day were now glowing black, as if they had turned into iron. The tanning vats were empty. She went across the echoing floor of the factory to the narrow stair. Mother had hauled their victims up these very treads, Miriam following along to watch and learn. How silent it was here, more silent than in any human place. This was still a lair, oh yes, but where was its inhabitant? Would Henri Soule not be at least a little curious about the stealthy noises down below, the unmistakable sounds of another keeper entering his sanctum? "Hello," she said, her voice uttering the sibilant, infinitely subtle sound of prime for the first time in many a long year. And then she saw him. He was much smaller than she remembered, and as dirty as a coal scuttle, a creature that had not bathed since the French court had filled its tubs with milk. His eyes were tiny and narrow, and he had the pinched face of a bat. He came forward wearing the tattered remains of a 100-year-old frock coat, otherwise as naked as his ancient birth. He was hungry, hissing hungry, as shadowy and insubstantial as a ghost. A wound opened in his ghastly face, bright red and dripping. He uttered a sound, horribly eager, and she realized that he thought her human. She was so radically different looking from other keepers that he believed her one of the kept. His skeletal hand snatched her wrists and closed them in a keeper's iron grip. Then his eyes met hers. The bright glow of eagerness flickered, faded. He had realized his mistake. He dropped his hands to his sides, then slumped at her feet. "Made," he whispered, not in prime, but in French. As she looked down at this filthy, groveling, helpless creature, she stuffed her fist in her mouth. But he was not deceived. He knew that he revolted her. because he laughed bitterly, angrily, laughed, but was unable to cover her screams.